Welcome to a special edition of the Spectator's View from 22 podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman, the assistant editor at The Spectator, and I'm joined by James Forsyth, the political editor, to discuss Nick Clegg's speech, which he has just finished delivering. James, what did you make of the speech?
Well, I thought it was a speech that set out the point of the Liberal Democrats. It admitted that they're not going to win a majority. It basically said, vote for us as a restraint on the other parties. You know, we're the only party that is economically competent and socially fair. I thought the message was, you can't trust Labour with the economy and you can't trust the Tories with society. I thought, though, you could tell listening to the speech that there's a lot more thought gone into a Tory-Lib Dem coalition than there has gone into a Lib Lab coalition. There are two red lines that Nick Clegg set out in the speech. One of them the Tories have already adopted as their policy too, which is this raising the income tax threshold to £12,500. And the other is on mental health. And I really cannot see that being a deal breaker.
I thought it was probably not the most exciting speech he's ever given. It probably had the worst payoff line ever, which was that the Liberal Democrats will let you shine, which sounds a little bit like they're trying to be a cleaning product company if politics fails for them. But I think it did what Clegg needed to do with his market, as his strategists call it, with the voters who might vote Liberal Democrat or have previously voted Liberal Democrat. And the mental health announcement is a really good policy announcement. It's a really important policy announcement, but it also goes down very, very well with that particular group, which is between 23% and 25%.
I thought you also could see Clegg almost drilling his activists what to say on the doorstep. You know, he set out why they should believe them, why Lib Dem promises should be believed, you know, by saying, look, all the things that we are talking about, we've already made some progress on, whether it's raising the income tax allowance or doing stuff on mental health or doing stuff for young people. Then I thought it was interesting on tuition fees. Although this was a kind of apology, it was the least apologetic I've heard him when he talked about it, because he basically said to the voters, it's up to you. You can judge us on the one thing we haven't managed to do, or you can judge us on all the things that we have done. This was a kind of theme through the speech that, you know, Clegg was actually kind of speaking up, kind of almost kind of taking on the anti-politics move by saying, actually, that's not entirely reasonable. And that he had this kind of series of pops at Farage and Salmond in the same vein. I think he wants to kind of attack this mood of negativity.
I thought it was really interesting that, having addressed tuition fees, he then basically went on to say that you couldn't trust the Labour Party or the Tories. And that was his pitch, basically, was that, look, we know we have a trust problem, but just look at the other parties. Aren't they so much worse? Don't you need us to restrain the Tories and to save this country from Labour's economic policies? Now, I completely agree with you about the way he was sort of much softer towards the Conservatives than he was towards Labour. Of course, he spent more of his speech attacking the Tories because he's been in government with them and has a good idea of the things on which they disagree. But towards the end, he said, Ed Miliband, you may have forgotten what you did to our economy, but we have not. And then he said to David Cameron, you can copy our ideas, but you will never imitate our values. And if you're choosing between two sort of not particularly attractive choices, you'd probably rather go for the person who's selfish than the person who's going to fritter away all of your money. And I think certainly Labour people have been very offended by that comparison that he's made in the past. And I think this will just underline the suggestion that actually for Clegg, working with the Tories is still far more palatable, no matter how much he protests.
Yeah, I mean, me thinks the Liberal Democrat stuff protests too much, because if you listen to all this anger aimed at the Tories, all this rhetoric, but then in terms of substance, they're actually moving closer together. So Vince Cable gave a kind of speech of a kind of classically Tory bashing section in it, but then he basically conceded the point on that there needs to be a clampdown on benefit tourism, which is going to be one of kind of the big bits of Cameron's EU renegotiation. I think also the other problem for the Liberal Democrats is, it's much easier to see how they act as a check on the Tories. They take some of the harder edges off. They say to the Tories, oh, you can't forget about these people. They might not be your voters, but you have to remember them. You have to look out for them. It's much harder to see how the Liberal Democrats could credibly make the Labour Party a fiscally competent. I think it's hard to see how a junior coalition partner can suddenly make a much bigger party be economically competent and be the party of fiscal rectitude.
Yeah, because unless you insisted on having a Lib Dem Chancellor, presumably the Lib Dem Chief Secretary to the Treasury would have to be telling the Chancellor what to do the whole time. And I suppose also, actually, it's quite unappealing for the Lib Dems, because at the moment they can be the nice party who stop the nasty Tories from doing all their evil things. Whereas actually, in coalition with Labour, they become the nasty party who'd block new schools and nice new sports pitches and that sort of thing. So that would be much less palatable for them.
Exactly, and all the things that Nick Clegg told his activists about how he'd stopped the Tories, he stood up to Theresa May, he told Cameron Osborne that they had to cut taxes for people at the bottom as well as people at the top. These are all things that the Lib Dem conference hall wants to hear. They all make them feel good about themselves. If you can imagine him coming back in a few years' time saying, "And I told Ed Miliband there wasn't the money to integrate social care into the NHS. I told Ed Miliband that we couldn't build a whole bunch of new schools because there isn't any cash left." It doesn't work for them as a party.
I think one really interesting difference between the Lib Dems and the Tories is that the Lib Dems did manage this conference season to give the impression they're not exhausted by coalition, whereas the Tories are fed up with it. Actually, obviously, the Lib Dems need to make the case for coalitions and give the impression that they haven't run out of road with the Conservatives. And even Vince Cable was saying that at a fringe that I was at, that there were still plenty of areas of agreement that they could find. If you speak to the Conservatives, a lot of them will say, "I find the idea of a Libcon coalition after 2015 deeply depressing because I can't see what policies we'd get through because we've run out of road." And I thought it was really interesting, naturally, that the Lib Dems were more optimistic, but they did manage to portray that optimism quite effectively this week.
Yeah, and I think they also are beginning to set out the things that they would do that, as you said, Isabel, will appeal in their market. And also these warnings that the Tories on their own would end up cutting public services more than people want. You know, there's that key line in the speech when he says that a government with the Lib Dems in it would borrow less than Labour but would cut less than the Tories too. I mean that is where they're trying to position themselves in the market. You know, we are more fiscally competent than Labour, but we'll stop the Tories from turning all axemen on you.
And do you think it's been a good conference for the Liberal Democrats?
I don't think it's been a vintage conference. I don't think it's going to live particularly long in the memory. But in terms of their electoral strategy, I think it's done what they needed it to do. And I think that you find here that people are in surprisingly good heart. They think that they're kind of resigned to some of the seats that they're going to lose, some of the Labour-facing seats. I think people have accepted that now. And yet it's striking that you don't bump into many activists from those kinds of seats here anymore. But they think they're going to hold on to somewhere between 30 and 40, and they think that that is going to be enough to give them the balance of power again. And that, you know, the one thing that gets them quite fired up is that they won't, that is the leadership gets fired up about it. So they won't let any other party try and do a minority government. I when I asked one of them what they would do if Labour attempted to do that, they said, "Well, we need a vote of no confidence on day one." I think they are quite convinced that whatever the brickbats that have been heaped on them over the last few years, they're going to be back in power after 2015.